Welcome to Interviews for Resistance. Since election night 2016, the streets of the U.S. have rung with resistance. People all over the country have woken up with the conviction that they must do something to fight inequality in all its forms. But many are wondering what it is they can do. In this series, we'll be talking with experienced organizers, troublemakers, and thinkers who have been doing the hard work of fighting for a long time. They'll be sharing their insights on what works, what doesn't, what has changed, and what is still the same. I am Sarah Jaffe, your host.
Hi, I'm Bishop Dwayne Royster. I am the political director of the PICO National Network and PICO Action Fund. I also serve as the first national vice chair of the Working Families Party.
Last week, you and quite a large coalition of people actually launched the Millions of Jobs campaign. So tell us about what that is.
Sure. We are working with a coalition of organizations that have pressed the Congressional Progressive Caucus to come up with a plan for a jobs and infrastructure bill that will put millions of people back to work, in particular those folks that have been really locked out of the job market, locked out of infrastructure opportunities and jobs, but also making sure that we are looking towards the future and not looking towards the past by building out green jobs, by working in urban areas, making sure people of color are prioritized in the work around the infrastructure bills that need to happen, that we're building our education infrastructure across the country, building new schools. We want to make sure we get parents and other people in the communities where those schools are being built on those job sites, creating job opportunities for them. So we're real excited because we think that the legislation that's going forward is going to be really progressive legislation. That's going to be transformative for communities. It's not about privatization. It's actually about making sure that public dollars are put towards the public trust and that the public ultimately benefits both from the resources that are being built, but from the job opportunities that are being created at the same time.
Yeah. So this is a pretty impressive coalition. Can you tell us a little bit about how it came together?
Sure. There's been a group working together for a season now, for about 18 months, that we're really trying to push progressive ideas in our nation. And it's a plethora of progressive organizing and advocacy groups that have been together for a while, including the PICO Network, Center for Popular Democracy, Working Families Party, DEMOS, Ultraviolet, Color of Change, and you know, you always get trouble starting with list because you start to forget people.
Yeah.
But it's about 20 organizations. The Progressive, the PCCC is a part of that. And, you know, after the election, we had been working together already, but after the election, we began to put our heads together and say, okay, what do we need to lift up? What are the important pieces? And one of the things that really came to the forefront was that there was going to be this jobs and infrastructure bill, that we were deeply concerned that the president and the majority in both the House and Senate were going to try to create privatized work that really only benefits the wealthy and doesn't really benefit the masses of people out there.
Yeah.
And so we began to say, we need to do something about this. We need to get out in front of this. We need to put out an agenda that is pro-family, that is pro-worker, that is pro-community, and it's pro-opportunity, which is what we did, and worked with the Congressional Progressive Caucus to do just that.
Let's talk about real public investment versus privatization, because, you know, Trump ran sort of talking about we're going to have an infrastructure plan, and something that probably didn't surprise a lot of us was that whatever infrastructure plans he's floated have a lot of privatization and very little public investment in them. So I would love you to talk about the importance of public investment and why that's something worth fighting for right now.
Well, I think, you know, ultimately public investment is about the public good and what's in the public interest. When we come to a place where we're talking about making sure that jobs stay in communities, that the infrastructure benefits communities, that we are talking about opportunities that will carry over for decades, you know, as opposed to privatization, which is basically designed to take what limited wealth are in poor and middle-class communities and pour into rich communities and let a few wealthy people benefit from that, that's absolutely destructive to our nation. It's destructive to the economy. What's exciting about what we're talking about is that public dollars are continually being recycled back in the community over and over again So when we talk about building out green infrastructure, and in the conversation about green infrastructure, we're also talking about ways that communities can create solar cooperatives and so forth to be able to generate the electricity that's necessary for the community. That's money that's being reworked in the community over and over again. When we talk about building new schools, right. And we are excited about that, and because the infrastructure for many of our schools, 60, 70 years old, some of them have asbestos in them, they're not in good shape. But what we're making an investment in is our young people that we know that will have a return over and over again. And when they're experiencing quality education, both in terms of teaching and also in facilities, they're going to continue to trust education as they go forth, have families, have children, continue to stay in those neighborhoods and those communities. That's exciting things that we're going to see happen. When we're working on building infrastructure, whether it's physical infrastructure like building bridges, and Lord knows our nation is struggling deeply because of the lack of the care and maintenance for the bridges that we have. But then we're not only building and rebuilding bridges, but we're also taking folk and communities that struggle deeply and getting them the training and the provisions that they need to be able to work on those sites and be able to build careers. That's the kind of stuff that's really going to be transforming to our nation. It's going to build our national economy. That's going to help grow our nation back into the state that we want to see it in, which is, you know, being a world leader. Right now, we're the laughingstock of the world. We want to be a world leader in many of these fields, in education, in infrastructure, in being innovative around opportunities to be able to use renewable resources.
Yeah, it's interesting to me to see, because so often when we think of infrastructure, people just sort of think of roads and bridges. And as you say, we desperately need to work on those, but also thinking about the infrastructure of care and of, you know, of taking care of one another, that education is such a key part of that. And it doesn't get included in these infrastructure discussions, particularly doesn't get included in infrastructure discussions under Trump and people like him.
Sure, absolutely not. And I think that, you know, I think Trump and others are, you know, they're trying to make deals and they're trying to, you know, maximize the profits for their friends and the other billionaires that they care about. But when we think about infrastructure, I think we have to think about the whole in terms of how we are building out our country, our nation, how we're building out future generations. Any infrastructure project is a project that you're looking at that has to last several decades. And what better investment in infrastructure than could be in building out solar energy, building out education priorities for our kids, making sure that we're creating job opportunities for people that have been locked out of those opportunities by, you know, creating, you know, well, good-paying middle-class jobs. I think that's infrastructure as well. I think infrastructure is much bigger than just looking at roads and bridges. Of course, they're incredibly important. Don't get me wrong on that. But it's important that we're looking at the infrastructure of a nation, which also includes the human resources that we have as well.
Yeah. And on that note, the coalition that is coming together on this, at least from what I've read, seems to include different parts of the labor movement that have been on opposite sides of some recent debates. So I'd love for you to talk about how something like this can bring different groups together.
Well, I think because we have a positive pro-America, pro-family, pro-community, you know, pro-infrastructure idea that's generating a bigger vision of what infrastructure is about, I think that the several of the trades and other unions that have joined with us in this are seeing the long-term impact that this can have and the positive it can have impact it can have on their industries. So when you're taking a look at some of the unions that are throwing down with us, you know, they're looking for workers, they're looking for skilled people, they need to train folks and prepare them for the future, and this helps to create opportunities for them to get some folks that have not normally been a part of their organizations.
Right.
When we, you know, think about the laborers and the building trades, even CWA is a part of this, and certainly telecommunications is one of those infrastructure pieces. We're talking about in this bill about expanding broadband into rural communities in other areas. It's going to be their workers that are going to be the ones that are going to build out the infrastructure for that in times to come. And they recognize that it's important. If America is to be the best that it can be and to thrive, then we all have to work together to come up with some real positive solutions that help us to become the best nation that we possibly can be. So this is in their best interest. I mean, they could cut deals. and, you know, work it out so that they benefit on some projects, but ultimately their workers are going to be on the same side of losing if Trump's plan goes through with privatization.
Yeah.
Because they're going to try to use every mechanism they can to try to pay workers the least amount of money and to try to get the most benefit out of them, as opposed to trying to pay good, solid union wage jobs, union benefits jobs that are going to benefit communities that struggle deeply across the country.
And so part of this is there is a bill, but there's also a list of principles that you put forth that say what any infrastructure plan must actually contain. So I'd love you to talk about those principles a little bit.
Sure. I mean, I can certainly talk about especially one principle that I worked really hard on was making sure that there was deep racial equity in the plan.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, in our country, in particular at this moment in time, we have used race has been used as a tool to really divide us. And what we're really talking about is trying to have a positive racial framework that says from the very beginning, we want everybody to thrive. And in particular, you know, people of color who have been locked out of opportunities around jobs and infrastructure. And so we want to make sure that it happens. We want to have a renewable energy strategy that helps us to understand that we have to think about new ways of creating energy bringing electricity and renewable resources into our homes, right? We have this free resource called the sun that we're not taking advantage of, and we want to be able to do that. We want to be able to lower emissions. We want to be able to improve the health outcomes in communities that have struggled as a result of use of coal for generations for some power plants and other industries, and try to find ways to be able to use resources that are not going to promote sickness and illness amongst folks. So we have principles that we're laying out that we're very clear about that we think are in the best interest of our nation, best interest of our communities, the best interest of getting people back to work and creating new job careers for people to be able to live into for a very long period of time.
And so what has been the response? I mean, you had quite a few members of Congress already signing on to this, but what's been the response since this went public?
I think there have been, I think it's been positive so far from what I have seen in the media, what I've witnessed in the media so far, and what I've heard from other folks. I think people are excited. I think they feel like this is moving in the right direction. Certainly, there have been naysayers on the conservative side who have, sort of dismissed it outright. But I think that for the most part, I think people are really excited that we've gotten out. It's a positive plan. We're trying to move something positive into the future, and we're trying to create a new framework for what America could look like.
Yeah, and talking about putting forward a positive viewpoint, I mean, looking forward into the 2018 election,
sure.
It seemed in many places like the Democratic Party really just wants to run about on Trump and Russia. And so I'd love you to talk about the purpose of having a plan like this to put forward and to actually say, like, it's not just that Trump is bad, but we actually have a plan that we want to enact. And if you put different people in office, we can maybe actually enact it.
Yeah, I think, you know, part of this is, not to get sidetracked on this, but that America has lost its identity. And it is a great bastion of multiple peoples, multiple ethnicities, multiple religions, multiple socioeconomic groups that are here on this one big place. And I think what this plan does is that it shows the best of what America could look like if we choose to be inclusive, if we choose to recognize each other as human beings, if we choose to see that there is no us and them, it's all of us together, so that we have a plan here that impacts both the urban communities and the suburbs and rural communities. It benefits Black, white, Latino, indigenous communities, Asian Pacific Islander communities. It benefits both those that are struggling deeply and those that have some level of wealth in this country. It really demonstrates basically what I think is the new American identity.
Yeah.
And ultimately, in many respects, what we are ultimately trying to drive to is, like, we need to create a new America that reflects the inclusion of all and the absence of none. And so I think that this is the type of legislation that helps us to see what America at its best could potentially look like.
Yeah. What are the plans going forward for a campaign around this plan?
Sure. So we are, all the organizations are continuing to roll this out within their institutions and working with their bases to help people begin working with their legislators to prepare them, both their House members and their Senate members, to let them know, hey, this is what our expectations are. We'll be doing the traditional things, phone banking and, you know, doing, visiting the legislators both in their home offices and also in D.C. But in addition to that, there'll be actions. We're going to be lifting this up with actions around the country so that people can get educated around the bill, see how this is going to benefit their community, and make sure that their voices are loud and clear. In both telling the House, the Senate, and the administration that these are what our expectations are for our country. I mean, after all, they work for us. We don't work for them.
Yeah. How can people get involved with that?
So there are a variety of organizations that we have mentioned before. We actually have a team. Certainly would invite folk, if they're interested in more information, they can reach out to Working Families Party. They can go to DEMOS. They can go to PICO National Network, or PICONetwork.org. They can reach out to any one of those organizations, Center for Popular Democracy, Color of Change, and all the organizations whose names I've always forget about, PCCC, which is, but there's ways that they can get involved in their local communities. And many of these bodies have organizations in their local areas that they can get them right on the ground. After all, it's not so much about just being a part of national work, but it's really the local work about hitting local members of Congress, about hitting their state senators from their states to let them know that this is what their expectations are for this work. So we would certainly invite them to get engaged. And if you want more information, again, go to PICONetwork.org, and they can reach out to me. That's Dwayne Royster, political director there, and I'll be glad to send more information to them.
Interviews for Resistance is a project of Sarah Jaffe with assistance from Laura Faillebois and support from the Nation Institute. You can find more information at necessarytrouble.org. Thanks for listening.